A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You're driving a rental van full of your entire apartment. You hit the brakes at a yellow light, and from behind you, you hear the deep, resonant scrape of a refrigerator sliding across the cargo floor. That sound. That's 144,000 joules of kinetic energy you forgot to plan for. And by the time you hear it, you're not stopping it.
That number, 144,000 joules. That's what a 1,500-kilogram load carries at 50 kilometers per hour. It's the same energy as dropping that entire load from a 10-meter height. And in a hard stop, all of that energy is looking for somewhere to go. Through your cargo. Through the van walls.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking through the logistics of a rental self-move. We've talked about choosing the van, understanding weight limits, getting tire pressures right. But his question today is about what happens inside the van. Load distribution and securement. How do you actually pack everything so it arrives in one piece? And more importantly, so you arrive in one piece?
The timing on this question is sharp. Rental van costs are up 18% year over year. More people are saying, I'll just do it myself. Which means more people are loading a van for the first time with no training, no load sheet, and a lot of heavy furniture.
The thing is, most people treat a rental van like a big trunk. Stack boxes, wedge the sofa in, hope for the best. But the people who move cargo for a living, the ones who load aircraft, they don't hope.
That's the lens Daniel's asking us to bring. What can a DIY mover steal from aviation cargo principles? What does a FedEx loadmaster know that you don't, and how much of that knowledge can fit into a Saturday morning with a rental van and a bathroom scale?
We're going to look at this in two parts. First, the physics of what's actually happening inside a moving van. Center of gravity. Friction, the forces that turn a washing machine into a projectile. And second, the practical techniques that keep everything where you put it. Straps that actually work. Loading sequences. The stuff you can do without a degree in engineering.
I should say up front, some of the numbers here are sobering. A study from the Journal of Transportation Safety found that 12% of van rollovers involve cargo shift as a contributing factor. And in 70% of those cases, the driver reported feeling the load move before they lost control. That's not a freak accident, that's a predictable failure.
Predictable and preventable. That's what we're after. So where do we start?
Let's start with what's happening in the van the moment you pull out of the driveway. Because the physics starts immediately, it doesn't wait for the emergency.
Walk me through it. I'm in the van. I've got a fridge, a washing machine, a dryer, a sofa, maybe 30 boxes of books. What's the first thing I'm getting wrong?
Almost certainly the center of gravity. Most people think about weight as a single number. Is the total load under the van's gross vehicle weight rating? And that matters, yes. But where that weight sits matters more. A van with all the heavy appliances loaded behind the rear axle handles completely differently from one with the weight centered between the axles.
It's not just how much you're carrying, it's where you're carrying it.
This is where the aviation parallel gets really useful. When a cargo airline loads an aircraft, they use software. Champ CargoSpot is the industry standard to calculate the exact center of gravity for every flight. They plot it on a graph called the load envelope. If the CG falls outside the safe operating envelope defined by the manufacturer, the aircraft doesn't fly.
Nobody's doing that for a rental van.
But the principle translates directly. Every van has axle weight ratings, the gross axle weight rating, or GAWR, for the front and rear axles, and a gross vehicle weight rating, the GVWR, for the whole thing. The trick that most people miss is that you can be under the GVWR and still dangerously overload one axle.
Give me an example.
Take a Ford Transit 350, GVWR of 4,670 kilograms, front GAWR of 1850, rear GAR of 3050. Now say you load a fridge, about 80 kilos, and a washing machine, about 70 kilos, right at the back, behind the rear axle, plus a sofa, 50 kilos, also behind the axle. That rear axle is now seeing maybe 1,100 kilos of load. The front axle? Maybe 100 kilos. You're under the total GVWR, but your front axle is at 5% of its rating and your rear axle is at 36%. In an emergency stop, your braking distance increases by 22% because the front wheels don't have enough weight on them to grip.
The van stops like it's on ice, even if the road is dry.
That's before we even talk about cornering. The NHTSA did a study. Improperly loaded vans are 2.5 times more likely to trigger a stability control intervention. That's the van's computer desperately trying to keep you upright because the physics is already going wrong.
Stability control can only do so much. It can't move the fridge back to where you should have put it.
Which brings us to the second mechanism, load shift. The cargo floor of a typical rental van is plywood or maybe a rubber mat. The coefficient of friction between your cargo and that floor is about 0.3 to 0.4. That's not a lot.
What does that actually mean in practice?
In a moderate turn, say 0.5 g of lateral acceleration, a normal roundabout, an unsecured 50 kg washing machine experiences about 250 newtons of lateral force. That's enough to overcome static friction and start it sliding. And once it's sliding, kinetic friction takes over, which is lower than static friction. So it keeps going. It doesn't stop until it hits something.
Like the inside wall of the van, or the other cargo, or the driver if there's no bulkhead.
This is where the distinction between static and kinetic friction really matters. Static friction is what holds something in place when it's not moving. Kinetic friction is what resists it once it's already sliding. Kinetic friction is always lower. So the force required to start something sliding is higher than the force required to keep it sliding. Once you cross that threshold, you've lost it.
The moment you hear that scrape, it's already too late. The physics has decided.
That's why the aviation industry doesn't rely on friction at all. They strap everything. Every container, every pallet has a specified tie-down pattern. The forward restraint standard in aviation is 1.5 G, meaning the tie-downs are designed to hold the cargo in place even if the aircraft decelerates at 1.5 times the force of gravity. The European road standard is 0.8 G. That's the minimum for trucks. But most DIY movers are securing their loads to something closer to 0.1 G, if that.
Because they're using bungee cords.
The little strap that came with the roof rack. None of those are rated for anything close to what a sudden stop demands. A bungee cord provides essentially zero restraint at 0.5 G. It stretches, and then the cargo is free.
What should they be using?
But not just any ratchet straps. You need to understand the rating. Every strap has a braking strength and a working load limit. The working load limit, or WLL, is typically 1/3 of the braking strength per the European standard EN12195-2. So a strap with a 500 deca-newton braking strength, about 500 kilograms of force, has a WLL of only about 167 deca-newtons. You need to know that number.
How do you figure out how much restraint you actually need?
You calculate it. For a 100 kilogram item, the European road standard says you need at least 80 deca-newtons of restraint force in the forward direction. That's the 0.8 G requirement. If you're using two straps at 45-degree angles to the floor anchors, each strap provides about 57 deca-newtons of forward component. Two straps give you 114, which covers your 80 with some margin.
Two properly angled ratchet straps per heavy item is the floor. Not a suggestion, a floor.
That's for road standard. If you want aviation-level safety, you'd need more. But even hitting the road standard would prevent the vast majority of load shift accidents.
Let me pull on something you said earlier. The Melbourne rollover.
Yeah, this was a case from 2024. DIY move, a refrigerator in the back of a van, secured with a single bungee cord. Driver enters a roundabout. The fridge slides. The weight shift causes the rear of the van to step out. That's load-induced oversteer, and the driver overcorrects. The van rolls. The load was secured with something that had essentially zero restraint capability at the lateral force of that turn.
The driver felt it. They felt the load move.
70% of drivers in cargo shift rollovers report feeling the load move before losing control. That's the terrifying part. You get a warning. It's just that by the time you feel it, the physics is already in motion, and correcting a dynamic load shift while cornering is beyond what most drivers can manage.
The margin for error is basically zero once you're moving. The safety has to be built in before you turn the key.
Which brings us to the practical question. How do you actually load a van so none of this happens? And I think the Aviation Loadmaster approach gives us a framework.
Walk me through it. I'm standing in front of an empty rental van with all my stuff on the curb.
Step 1. Know your weights. Not guess, no. Weigh heavy items on a bathroom scale if you can. If not, use known averages. A fridge is about 80 kilos, a washer 70, a dryer 60, a sofa 50, a bookshelf 30. Write it down. You're building a load sheet.
A DIY load sheet.
Step 2. Find the center of the van. For a standard long wheelbase van, the ideal center of gravity is between 45 and 55% of the wheelbase length from the front axle. Mark those points on the floor with tape. Everything heavy goes between those lines.
Not at the back, not even at the very front, between the axles.
Between the axles, centered laterally, as low as possible. The heaviest items go on the floor, not stacked on top of other things. You want the center of gravity low and centered. A high CG increases rollover risk. A rear bias CG reduces front wheel traction. A forward bias CG overloads the front axle. The sweet spot is narrow.
Once the heavy stuff is in place.
Step 3. Increase friction. Put furniture blankets or rubber mats under heavy items. That can double the coefficient of friction from 0.3 to about 0.6. It's not a substitute for strapping, but it helps. Every little bit of resistance reduces the force the straps have to handle.
Step 4. Strap everything independently. Each heavy item gets its own two straps, crossed at 45 degrees to the anchor points. Don't daisy chain straps across multiple items. If one shifts, it loosens the whole chain.
Step 5. Fill gaps with boxes to prevent lateral movement. But here's the key. Don't rely on boxes for restraint. Under load, a box that seemed tightly wedged will collapse and create a gap. The straps do the restraining. The boxes just take up space.
The boxes are ballast, not structure.
One more thing. The 10-minute load check. Before you drive, walk around the van. Push every heavy item laterally and forward. If anything moves more than 2 centimeters, restrap it. Check that straps aren't twisted. A twist reduces the effective strength. Check that ratchets are fully closed and locked.
That's the difference between a safe move and a Melbourne rollover.
Here's the thing Daniel's question really gets at. This isn't complicated. It's not expensive. Ratchet straps cost maybe $20 for a set of 4. A bathroom scale you already own. Tape for the floor is $2. The knowledge is free, now that we've talked about it. The only real cost is 10 minutes of attention before you drive.
The cost of not doing it is what? A total van? A hospital visit?
The Journal of Transportation Safety Study found that cargo shift is a contributing factor in 12% of van rollovers. That's more than 1 in 10. And every single one of those was preventable with proper load distribution and securement.
The aviation industry figured this out decades ago. Load envelope, rated straps, calculated restraint forces. And the DIY moving world is still operating on hope and bungee cords.
The gap is staggering when you look at it side by side. A FedEx loadmaster wouldn't be allowed to secure a 50-kilo package with a bungee cord. They'd be fired. But a guy moving his apartment does it, and nobody stops him.
Because there's no loadmaster at the U-Haul counter.
There won't be. So the loadmaster has to be you. You don't need the software, you don't need the certification, you just need to understand the principles and apply them for the 3 hours your stuff is in that van.
All right, I want to go deeper on something. You mentioned the load envelope concept from aviation. What does that actually look like in practice for a van?
In aviation, the load envelope is a graph. The horizontal axis is the center of gravity position. The vertical axis is the total weight. The manufacturer draws a polygon showing the safe combinations of weight and CG. If your plotted point falls inside the polygon, you're good. Outside, you don't fly. For a van, the equivalent is axle weights plotted against total weight. You've got your front GAWR, your rear GAWR, and your GVWR. For any given load distribution, you can calculate the weight on each axle. If either axle exceeds its rating, you're outside the envelope, even if the total weight is under GVWR.
The envelope is defined by 3 lines, essentially. Front axle max, rear axle max, total max.
Here's where it gets counterintuitive. Loading heavy items forward increases front axle weight, which is usually fine because the engine is already there and the front GAWR accounts for that. Loading heavy items rearward increases rear axle weight, which is where people get into trouble because they assume the back of the van is the place for heavy stuff. But the rear axle is farther from the center mass of the vehicle, so weight behind it acts as a lever. Every kilo behind the rear axle unweights the front axle by more than a kilo, because of the lever arm. That's why braking distance goes up so dramatically. You're literally lifting the front of the van off the road in a dynamic sense.
The rule of thumb is heavy stuff between the axles, not behind them.
Between the axles, as low as possible, centered side to side. That's the golden rule. And if you have to put something heavy behind the rear axle, then you compensate by adding more weight forward. But that's a balancing act that most people shouldn't attempt without weighing everything and doing the math.
Which circles back to the bathroom scale. You can't balance what you haven't measured.
Can't balance what you haven't measured. That should be on a bumper sticker.
The sloth proverb for the day.
I put it on the van, but the adhesive might affect the rental agreement.
That's the physics at stake. 144,000 joules in a 1,500 kilo load at 50 kilometers an hour. You stop hard, and all that energy has to go somewhere. If your cargo isn't strapped, it goes through the van.
Most people don't even think of it as a physics problem. They think of it as a packing problem, Tetris with furniture. Get everything to fit, close the door, drive carefully. But careful driving doesn't cancel momentum. The forces are there whether you're aware of them or not.
This episode is really about borrowing the Loadmaster's mindset for a Saturday morning move, treating the van not as a big trunk, but as a mini cargo aircraft where load distribution determines whether you arrive safely.
The gap between those two mindsets is where the accidents happen. The aviation standard for forward restraint is 1.5 G. The European road standard for trucks is 0.8 G. The typical DIY mover is operating somewhere around 0.1 G, if they're using anything at all. That's not a small gap. That's an order of magnitude.
Let's dig into the center of gravity, because it's the thing nobody thinks about until the van feels wrong. The CG of a vehicle is the single point where all its weight is concentrated for calculation purposes. In a van, you've got two axes that matter: height and longitudinal position. Height determines rollover threshold. Longitudinal position determines braking stability and steering traction.
The longitudinal shift is the one that bites first. Think of the rear axle as a fulcrum. Weight behind it levers the front end up. Not visibly, we're talking millimeters, but dynamically, that slight unweighting of the front tires reduces their contact patch force. Less force on the contact patch means less friction available for braking and steering. The NHTSA study quantified this. Improperly loaded vans trigger stability control 2.5 times more often than properly loaded ones. That's the computer sensing the tires are about to let go.
The 30% braking distance increase you mentioned earlier, that's from the same mechanism.
Front tires do roughly 70% of the braking work in a van. Unweight them, and you've crippled your primary stopping force. In that Transit 350 example, with 1,100 kilos on the rear axle and 100 on the front, the front tires are barely kissing the road. ABS will trigger almost immediately because there's so little traction available.
The van's safety systems are screaming, but they can't fix the weight distribution.
They can't. Stability control can break individual wheels to counteract a skid, but it can't magic weight back onto the front axle. Now the second axis, CG height, that's the rollover risk. A high CG means a lower threshold for lateral tip. Put a fridge upright in the back, its mass is centered maybe a meter off the floor. That's a lot of leverage in a corner.
That's before it starts sliding. Once it slides, the CG shifts dynamically.
Which is the nightmare scenario. Static load distribution is bad enough. Dynamic load shift during a corner is what causes load-induced oversteer. The cargo slides outward, the rear of the van gets heavier mid-turn, the back steps out, and the driver's instinctive correction, more steering input, makes it worse. That's the sequence in the Melbourne case.
Let me trace the friction problem. You said the coefficient between cargo and a plywood floor is 0.3 to 0.4. Walk me through why that number matters.
Friction force is the normal force, the weight of the object, multiplied by the coefficient of friction. A 50-kilo washing machine exerts about 490 newtons of normal force. Multiply by 0.3, and you get about 147 newtons of static friction holding it in place. That's the threshold. Push harder than that, and it slides.
A moderate turn pushes harder than that.
At 0.5g lateral acceleration, the lateral force on that same washer is its mass times the acceleration, about 245 newtons. That's nearly double the static friction threshold. So it slides. And once it's sliding, kinetic friction takes over, which for these surfaces is closer to 0.2. Now the resisting force drops to about 98 newtons. The washer accelerates into the van wall.
The moment it moves, the math gets worse.
Static friction is your friend. Kinetic friction is just a speed bump. And that's why I wedged it in pretty tight doesn't work. Wedging depends on static friction. The first bump in the road compresses the cardboard boxes around it, and suddenly the wedge is gone. Now you've got kinetic friction and a gap.
Which brings us to the aviation approach. You mentioned the load envelope. What does that actually look like for someone loading a van?
In practice, it's a three-constraint problem. Constraint 1, total weight can't exceed GVWR. Constraint 2, weight on the front axle can't exceed front GAWR. Constraint 3, weight on the rear axle can't exceed rear GAWR. The safe envelope is where all three are satisfied simultaneously. For the Transit 350, that's 4670 total, 1850 front, 3050 rear.
The trap is that you can satisfy the first constraint while violating the other two.
That's the misconception that gets people. They look at the GVWR on the door sticker, load up to that number, and think they're safe. But axle ratings are independent limits. Take the example from earlier, 1200 kilos of cargo, but all the heavy stuff behind the rear axle. Total weight is fine. The rear axle is at 1100 kilos, under its 3050 rating. The problem is the front axle at 100 kilos, 5% of its rating. That's dangerously underloaded.
Underloaded sounds like it should be safe. Less weight, less stress.
That's the counterintuitive part. An underloaded axle means reduced traction. The tires need weight to generate friction. Below a certain threshold, they're just skimming the surface. Steering gets vague, braking gets unpredictable. The van feels floaty, and in an emergency, that floatiness becomes loss of control.
What's the actual calculation? If I've got a fridge and a washer, and I need to know whether putting them behind the axle is safe, how do I figure that out?
You need the moment arm. Measure the distance from the rear axle to the center of mass of the load behind it. Multiply that distance by the weight. That's the moment unweighting the front axle. For the fridge and washer together, 150 kilos, say a meter behind the axle, that's 150 kilogram meters a moment lifting the front. The wheelbase of a Transit 350 long is about 3.75 meters. Divide the moment by the wheelbase, and you get the effective weight transferred off the front axle, about 40 kilos. But that's just the static case. Under braking, the deceleration itself transfers weight forward, partially compensating. The problem is, if the rear load is heavy enough, the net front axle load under braking is still too low.
The math gets complicated fast.
Which is why the aviation industry doesn't do this by hand. They use software. But for a DIY mover, the practical shortcut is simpler. Keep everything heavy between the axles. If it has to go behind, weigh it, measure the distance, and check that the front axle still has at least 30% of its rating under the worst case. But honestly, for most people, the between the axles rule eliminates the need for the math entirely.
The loadmaster's envelope, translated for a rental van, is basically two pieces of tape on the floor marking the 45 and 55% points of the wheelbase.
A bathroom scale, and the door sticker with the axle ratings. That's the poor man's cargo spot. It won't plot a polygon for you, but it'll keep you inside the envelope where the physics is forgiving.
That Melbourne case sticks with me. A single bungee cord on a fridge, a roundabout, and the van's on its side. But what I keep thinking about is the driver felt it happen. They felt the load move, and then it was too late.
That 70% number from the Journal of Transportation Safety Study is the part that should keep people up at night. The driver gets a warning. The cargo shifts, the van's balance changes, and for a split second you know something is wrong. But the dynamic load shift is already in progress. The center of gravity is moving while you're mid-corner. That's load-induced oversteer. The rear of the van steps out because the mass that was centered is now somewhere else entirely.
Overcorrecting is almost instinctive.
It's what untrained drivers do. The back steps right, you crank the wheel left, and now you've added steering input to an already unstable vehicle. The rollover is almost guaranteed at that point. 12% of van rollovers involve cargo shift. That's more than 1 in 10. and every one of those is a physics problem that was solvable before the key turned.
Let's talk about the hardware that actually solves it. You mentioned ratchet straps earlier, but not all straps are equal, and I think that's where a lot of people get tripped up.
Walk into any hardware store and you'll see ratchet straps rated to 500 deconewtons, about 500 kilograms of breaking strength. Sounds like more than enough for a washing machine. But the number that matters isn't the breaking strength, it's the working load limit.
Those are very different numbers.
The European standard EN12195-2 specifies that the working load limit is one-third of the breaking strength. So that 500 deconewton strap, its WLLL is only about 167 deconewtons. That's the maximum safe working load. Exceed it, and you're in the margin where the strap can fail without warning.
The strap that says 500 kilos on the package can actually only handle about 167 safely.
Most people don't know that. They see the big number, they ratchet it down until it feels tight, and they assume they're safe. But they haven't done the calculation for what the load actually demands.
Walk me through that calculation.
The European road standard requires 0.8 g of forward restraint. For a 100 kilogram item, that means you need at least 80 deconewtons of restraint force in the forward direction. Now, if you run two straps at 45 degree angles to the floor anchor points, each strap provides about 57 deconewtons of forward component. Two straps give you 114 deconewtons total. That covers your 80 with some margin.
Two straps per heavy item, angled at 45 degrees, is the floor. Not one strap, not a vertical strap.
That's just meeting the road standard. The aviation standard is 1.5 G. For that same 100 kilo item, you'd need 150 deconewtons of forward restraint. That's three straps at 45 degrees, or two straps at a steeper angle. The aviation industry over-engineers for safety because the consequences of failure are absolute.
The DIY mover is typically under-engineering by a factor of 3 to 5. You said that earlier, operating at 0.1 G when the road standard demands 0.8.
A bungee cord provides essentially zero restraint at half a G. Rope might give you something, but it's not rated. You don't know the braking strength, and not slip under dynamic load. The Melbourne driver probably thought the bungee was enough. It looked secure in the driveway.
Static versus dynamic. Everything looks secure in the driveway.
That's the trap. So here's what a proper loading protocol looks like, start to finish. Step 1. Weigh everything heavy. Bathroom scale if you have one. If not, use known averages. Fridge 80 kilos, washer 70, dryer 60, sofa 50, bookshelf 30. Write it down. You're building a load sheet, even if it's just on the back of an envelope.
Step 2. Placement.
Heaviest items between the axles, centered laterally, as low as possible. Nothing heavy stacked on top of other things. The washing machine does not ride on top of the dryer because it fits better that way. They go side by side on the floor between your tape marks.
Step 3. You mentioned increasing friction.
Furniture blankets or rubber mats under every heavy item. This doubles the coefficient of friction from about 0.3 to around 0.6. It's not a substitute for strapping, but it reduces the force the straps have to handle. A rubber mat under a fridge means the static friction threshold is higher, which means it takes a harder corner to break it loose.
Step 4. Strapping.
Each heavy item gets its own two straps, crossed at 45 degrees to the floor, anchor points. Don't daisy chain straps across multiple items. If one shifts, it loosens the whole chain and now nothing is secured. Each strap's ratchet fully closed and locked. No twists in the webbing. A twist reduces effective strength.
Step 5. Fill the gaps.
Boxes and loose items fill the spaces between the heavy stuff to prevent lateral movement. But, and this is critical, do not rely on boxes for restraint. Under dynamic load, a box that seemed tightly wedged will collapse and create a gap. The straps do the restraining. The boxes just take up space so things can't build momentum before hitting the strap.
The boxes are gap fillers, not structural.
Then, the 10-minute load check. Before you drive, push every heavy item laterally and forward. If anything moves more than 2 centimeters, re-strap it. Check that ratchets are locked. Check that straps aren't twisted. That's the difference between a safe move and a statistic.
All of this, the scale, the tape, the straps, the blankets, we're talking maybe $40 and some attention, versus a total van or worse.
The cost-benefit on this is almost absurd. The aviation industry spends millions on load planning software and training because a cargo shift at altitude is catastrophic. The DIY mover can get 90% of the safety benefit for the price of lunch. The physics doesn't care about your budget. It cares about whether the restraint force exceeds the inertial force. That's it. That's the whole game.
Let's boil this down to three things you can actually do. Not theory, not physics, though we've done that part, but the checklist you run through on moving day.
First one, and this is the one I put on a sticker on every rental van dashboard, the three-point rule. Every item over 30 kilos needs at least 3 points of contact with the van structure, 2 straps, and the floor friction. If any one of those 3 fails, the other 2 are still working. No item should rely solely on being wedged between boxes.
Because boxes crush.
And once the wedge is gone, you're down to 0 points of contact and a washing machine that's now a free agent.
The second one, you mentioned this earlier, but it's worth isolating. The 10-minute load check.
This is the thing almost nobody does. You finish loading, you're tired, you want to get on the road. But 10 minutes of walk around before you turn the key prevents everything we've been talking about. Push every heavy item laterally and forward. If it moves more than 2 centimeters, restrap it. Check that straps aren't twisted. A twist can reduce braking strength by up to 50% in some webbing types. Check that ratchets are fully closed and locked.
The third one is the cheat sheet for where things actually go. You mentioned the tape marks.
The CG cheat sheet. For a standard long wheelbase van, the ideal center of gravity sits between 45 and 55% of the wheelbase length from the front axle. Measure your wheelbase, it's on the spec sheet, or you can pace it out. Multiply by 0.45 and 0.55, mark those 2 lines on the floor with tape. Everything over 30 kilos lives between those lines. If it can't fit between them, it goes as close as possible and gets extra straps.
3 rules, 3 points of contact, 10 minutes of checking, 2 lines of tape. That's the Loadmaster's mindset in about $40 of supplies and some attention.
The thing is, none of this requires being an engineer. The aviation industry needs the math because they're optimizing for fuel burn across thousands of flights and the stakes are absolute. A DIY mover just needs to be conservative. Keep it low, keep it centered, strap it like you mean it, check it before you drive. The physics rewards caution.
There's one thing we haven't touched that connects this to the tire pressure conversation Daniel brought up earlier. Load distribution and tire pressure aren't separate problems. They interact. A rear biased load demands higher pressure in the rear tires to handle the weight and maintain the contact patch shape. But most DIY movers inflate all 4 tires to the same pressure because that's what the door sticker says for an empty van.
The door sticker assumes a balanced load. Put 1,100 kilos on the rear axle and 100 on the front, and suddenly the rear tires are overloaded for their pressure while the front tires are overinflated for their load. Overinflated front tires on an already underweighted axle. That's a recipe for zero steering feel and extended braking distance.
You're compounding the physics problem with a tire problem.
Almost nobody connects those dots. The rental counter doesn't ask what you're hauling. They hand you the keys, and the van has whatever pressure the last guy left in the tires.
The good news is this is starting to change at the vehicle level. The new Mercedes Sprinter models have load-sensing suspension that can detect improper weight distribution and warn the driver. The van itself becomes the Loadmaster.
Which is genuinely exciting. But that technology is on 2026 models, brand new, not what you're getting at the rental counter for at least a few more years. Until then, the responsibility sits entirely with the person loading the van.
Next time you're standing in front of a rental van with your entire apartment on the curb, think like a Loadmaster. Know your weights. Keep the heavy stuff low and between the axles. Strap everything like the physics demands, not like it looks secure in the driveway. And spend 10 minutes checking before you turn the key.
The physics doesn't care that you're not a professional. It applies the same forces to your fridge as it does to a FedEx pallet. The only variable is whether you plan for them.
Now, Hilbert Staley fun fact.
In the 1880s, Portuguese colonists on São Tomé and Príncipe coined the term pororoca, borrowed from the Tupi word for great destructive noise, to describe the tidal bore that surges up the Amazon, though the islands themselves have no such phenomenon. They simply found the word too good not to export.
Right. This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you found this useful, share it with someone who's about to move a fridge with a bungee cord. We're at myweirdprompts.com.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.